Welcome to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton. On this program, we're going to talk about the infamous freeze on October 27th, 2020, and how it affected wine grapes in Colorado, specifically on the Western Slope. As a farmer myself and an avid wine lover, this story hits pretty close to home. The devastating reality for most of Colorado's wine grape growers and producers is a loss of between 80 and 100% of most wine grapes for the 2021 growing season. What's particularly interesting to me is that the consumers may not realize what's going on behind the scenes. I hope that this program helps tell the story of the farmer and the challenges of keeping their crops alive in an ever-changing and sometimes destructive climate. On this Local Motion, we'll hear from Colorado Wine Industry Development Board Director Doug Caskey, who remains optimistic about the future of Colorado wines. We'll also hear from several growers and producers, including Julie Bennett from Katori Wines in Paonia, Jamie Henderson and Steve Steese, who own and operate the Storm Cellar Winery in Hotchkiss. And we'll hear from Kaibab Savage and Patrick Metashevsky from Savage Spectrum, located in Palisade, Colorado. Up first, we'll hear from Doug Caskey, Director of the Colorado Wine Industry Development Board. I asked Doug Caskey if within his 20-plus years of working in the Colorado wine industry, if he's seen anything as devastating for Colorado wine as the October 27th, 2020 freeze.
You know, when I started, people were saying once every 10 years or so, we have a devastating freeze in Colorado. It hasn't always been exactly 10 years, but there have been a lot of severe damage incidents. The fact that this is the second year, you know, almost a virtually identical winter event in late October for 2 years in a row, that is making things perhaps worse than many of the problems. I don't know if I'd say this is the worst, but, you know, hopefully a one-time fluke and not a new trend.
Mm-hmm. I know you were over in the Grand Valley and then you popped over to the North Fork Valley. Maybe talk a little bit about some of the vineyards you visited and what you're seeing, and is it a trend for all wineries, vineyards in Western Colorado?
The answer to the last statement is no, it's not. Down in the Four Corners area, the bad October freezes didn't get down there.
Oh.
So their grapes are still doing okay. I don't think the Fremont County grapes in Canyon City were quite as bad, although I do think they got some bad temperatures there. The reason this was so problematic was grapes need a period to harden off before they can withstand winter temperatures. And generally, that begins once the grapes are harvested. And then they start to go through a period of probably a month or two of entering into dormancy. They're fine for temperatures down to zero or even 10 below, usually.
Wow.
But the fact that this came right at the end of harvest last year and the previous year is what made it particularly devastating. And so the grapes that got hit the worst were the late ripening grapes, Cabernet Sauvignon to some degree, Cabernet Franc. Those are the grapes that we see that have pretty much died down to the ground. That doesn't mean the vines are dead. It just means that the cordons, the branches that are coming back, are coming from the roots. And so it will take another year or two to retrain those vines and get commercially viable crop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yes, the damage in Delta and Mesa counties was pretty extensive. And will the consumer even notice this is another question.
Right.
And I doubt it. I mean, remember that grapes take a year minimum to 2 or 3 years for some reds before they make wine, before that wine reaches the market. So it's going to be a while before this freeze really begins to impact our grape supply. We've had bumper crops the previous several years, including 2019, even though the harvest came a little earlier than everybody was hoping, we had a big yield that year. So there's a lot of wine that's still in the pipeline, and that's going to be something the consumer can depend on for several more years. Plus, the other thing we have, because of these winter events over the last several years, a lot of growers have shifted to the cold-tolerant hybrids, the cultivars that cross Native American vines with European vines, and with a lot of success. Mixed results from the freeze, but a lot of the surviving vines are the cold-tolerant grapes, and that's real encouraging. You know, these are grapes people haven't heard of necessarily. Chamberson, St. Vincent, Marquette, grapes like that. And, you know, they used to say, well, those grapes don't make good wine. Well, that's not true, because nobody was paying attention. Nobody was treating the grapes with the respect they deserve when they made the wines. Mm-hmm. And so there's some fantastic wines out there now. Some of them are a blend of vinifera, or the traditional European grape varieties, and some of the cold tolerant varieties. And they're incredible wines. They're new and different. And maybe they don't have familiar names, but I think now is a great time for people to explore those, because, you know, a year or two down the road, when we do start to see the effects of this freeze hit the market, those are the wines that are going to be available. And I really encourage people to try them, because there's some great wines out there.
Mm-hmm. What are you telling winemakers that are pulling 10,000 vines out of their fields right now? Are there resources available for Colorado winemakers?
Yes. This is one of the first times I've been told that the USDA's Tree Fruit Assistance Program has been used for grapevines here in Colorado anyway. And that's a program where the USDA will help farmers with the costs of replanting, even retraining. While yes, we will be replanting some vines, a majority of what we saw the last week when we were over there is the new vines, the young shoots coming up from the roots. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that there's going to be a labor-intensive process of retraining them up to the trellis. And that's what the USDA program will help with. So a lot of the growers we talked to had applied for that. It doesn't necessarily work for everybody, but it is a good program that offers some support in this kind of climate event.
It sounds like the USDA might be granting some funding to help with the labor expenses of retraining, or what is, do you know more?
They reimburse the growers. It's like an insurance program, but it's a little different than their normal crop insurance.
Okay.
Because it is targeted toward the actual loss of tree fruit or trees. And so if the growers do have to replace a vine, there's a little larger payment than if they just have to retrain a vine. Okay. It's a great program to help cover the cost. It doesn't cover everything, but that's a good source. I mean, and it's a program that's always been out there, but I don't believe it's ever been used for grapevines here in Colorado.
Well, grapes are fruit.
Yes, they are.
How many wineries are in Colorado in total?
It's a moving target. You know, people opening, people closing, but we've been saying about 165 or so. Cideries are licensed as wineries, so that pushes us well up to the 175, 185.
So cool. What do you love the most about what you do for the wine industry here in Colorado?
You know, it's exciting to be part of a growing industry, a small industry that's trying to find its own way. And I love talking to the wineries and the grape growers who are so passionate about what they do. That's always been my attraction to the wine industry, wherever, is that the people in the industry are just so enthusiastic and wonderful people. And it makes the job a real delight. But I think here, you know, the excitement of working with a small industry is what makes it so rewarding.
That was Doug Caskey, director of the Colorado Wine Industry Development Board. You're tuned in to Local Motion. I'm Corey Stanton. And on this program, we're discussing the Colorado wine industry and the effects of the devastating October 27th, 2020 freeze. Up next, we'll hear from Julie Bennett, owner of Katori Wines and Root and Vine Market in Paonia, Colorado.
We've owned our vineyard since 2016 in April, and then we bought the market in October of that year. And then we opened in 2017 in August. So we've been making wine. My son's our winemaker, that's Kyle Bennett, and he is 28 and he is doing a great job. We've been growing grapes. The grapes existed. Lee Bradley planted that vineyard at least 20 years ago and it's been doing awesome. It's Pinot Noir grapes and it is not very happy right now. Not all of the trunks, but most of the trunks are split, so it won't support the grapes for this year. And so we are cutting them down to the base, and they will grow back from the root. They're actually very happy doing that, but we won't have fruit for a year. So that's kind of the sad thing with the wine. We have, I think, 10 different varietals, types of wine that we sell. at least four different types of Pinot Noir that we do. And we do a rosé Pinot Noir, an estate Pinot Noir, a bourbon barrel aged Pinot Noir, and a reserve Pinot Noir. We like to make red wine. So a lot of our grapes do come from the Grand Valley, and they have kind of the same situation. So 2021 vintage isn't going to be the best.
Where will you get your grapes from this year?
We might not have any. We've been talking about possibly going to Oregon or Washington, which then they wouldn't be Colorado, which we really prefer. So we're not sure. We haven't really investigated that. I know some people are going to like southern Colorado, Cortez area. I believe they have some grapes. If we get grapes, we would get Pinot Noir of some kind, which Oregon is the best. So we'll just see if that's a possibility, but we haven't really done a ton of research yet. We've kind of been sort of trying to pretend that it's not really happening, but it's here.
And this was direct damage from that late October freeze 2020. Any other impacts?
Not really any other impacts other than just the dry weather. So the drought is really not helping anything. We have water at the moment, but who knows how long that's going to last. If you look up at the snow on Lambourne, it's not pretty. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at. We have another vintage in the barrel, which won't be released for another year. So we're okay for a year out, and we have 1,200 cases this year. So we're kind of keeping our wine in the valley. We're not trying to take it all to Denver or anything like that. We're going to keep it here and taste it in our tasting room, and that's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, that's great that you have kind of that padding to get you hopefully through to the next season.
Hopefully. We didn't make as much wine this last year. We only made 800 cases for the 2020 red wine vintage. We have some whites that'll come out for 2020, but it's just hard to know. Being a farmer is not easy. We love making wine, but the farming part is challenging for sure.
Yeah, lots of elements totally out of our control. I'll include myself in this part of the conversation, being a farmer. It sounds like with Root and Vine, with the market, and with your tasting room, that you're still able to completely serve agritourism, you know, customers as they're coming through the North Fork Valley. Are customers asking about the grapes and what's going on? Are consumers aware, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I've been informing people because, no, I don't believe they are aware. And the reason it becomes a conversation is just, they're like, well, where are your grapes grown? And I tell them across the street. And while we're cutting them all to the bottom, they don't look like they normally do. Now they would all be in bud. We'd actually be seeing some tiny bitty grapes forming, and that's not happening. So, no, people I don't think have any clue, but they're still definitely traveling, and they want to see. They're amazed by our valley, and they love it. And they're like, oh, well, you know, they're just surprised that this place exists. It's just tough with the grapes and the fruit. We have a cherry orchard as well, and the cherry orchard hasn't been able to produce for the last 2 years, so that's kind of sad too. So we're thinking maybe grapes. We haven't really decided yet what we're going to do next.
What's your number one goal going into this season, and what's going to be the biggest challenge?
Well, we're sort of going to change our business model just a little bit because of the lack of employees. We're going to keep the restaurant cafe part open only 4 days a week this year. So we're going to be open Thursday through Sunday, 8 to 6. And then the other couple days, Mondays and Wednesdays, I'm going to focus more on wine. So that's kind of where we're going to move towards. We're going to open at 11 to 6, and we'll do small plates like charcuterie boards and bruschetta and things that go with wine. But we're not going to have the full kitchen. We're going to have a limited menu. And we will still do coffee, but we will not do breakfast on those days. So I think that's our biggest challenge it's kind of complicated, but I feel like finding another cook is challenging too. So I'm happy with what's going on there, and we're just going to see if this works. Then we'll have a little more focus on wine, a little less craziness maybe. I don't know. We've been super busy the last season and this season already. It's been busy, which is great. But it's a challenge too. I mean, all those things, you know, balancing everything is hard. And, you know, we do have three businesses basically. You know, we have the farm and the winery and the cafe, and to juggle all those. And we just sort of opened a little gift shop. So all those things are great, but they're all different. So they all have their own special needs.
We just heard from Julie Bennett from Katori Wines and Root and Vine Market in Paonia, Colorado. You're listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Corey Stanton. Next, we'll hear from another North Fork Valley winery, the Storm Cellar. Jamie Henderson and Steve Steese own and operate the Storm Cellar on Sunshine Mesa in Hotchkiss. Here's the dynamic duo talking about the harsh realities of farming in a fairly unpredictable climate and about the impacts from the temperature drop on October 27th, 2020.
We had just been dealing with temperatures that were in the 80s, low 90s. The weather was beautiful. It was shaping up to be a wonderful harvest. All of the grapes were in, and we had just recently picked our Riesling grapes. So by the 27th, none of the vines had time enough to go into dormancy. So they were wide open, susceptible. If the temps did dip, they would be affected. So our temperatures went down to 3 degrees here on our property, and we were about 6,000 feet above sea level. We couldn't turn our wind machines on. It was futile to do that. The temperatures were already that low, and all we could do was just sit and wonder what was going to happen and hope for the best. So we ended up doing like a bud count. So you look at the buds that were produced that summer of 2020. Those are the parts of the plant that give you your fruit in the upcoming year. So we did a bud count after the frost, and we anticipated about an 85% loss. And as the, you know, vines were hopefully awakening in the spring of 2021, we were starting to prune in early March. As those vines awakened, as the sap began to flow from the roots, we were beginning to see trunks splitting, absolutely splitting from the base. So even if you did get some green up top, if you did have some form of life, that plant is not going to remain alive. So we stopped pruning because it was a waste of time. And so if you look out on our vineyard right now, you'll see dead vines, dead trunks. You can see last year's growth that we normally would have pruned down at this point during the season, right at the end of May. We would see growth, you know, between 6 to 8 inches. We'd be anticipating the flowering stage, and we are seeing nothing. So we are at the point where we can, on our own rooted, meaning ungrafted plants, we can take a shoot from the base of the plant and train it for next year. We can train that to become a trunk. So we're not getting any fruit from it this year. And we may get some fruit from it next year because those vines are the Riesling vines that we have were planted in 1997 and 2008, and they have a strong root system. And so you can train up one of the shoots to become a new plant.
What's a normal lifespan for wine grapes, and does it depend on the variety?
I expect it does depend on the variety. I assume that if you were growing in some place where the vine was not threatened as much by climatic issues, that you'd have a longer chance of prolonging the vine's life. In wine growing regions, when you plant a new vine, you expect to get fruit in year 3 or 4. You expect the plant to really mature around year 10 or 15. And from year 10 to maybe year 25 or 30, that's sort of prime time for the vine. If you see, on a California label that says old vines, that's usually 40 years or older. And there certainly are vineyards across the world and even here in the United States that are well over 100 years old. But those are few and far between. And at that age, the plant will be producing much, much less fruit.
We were definitely hoping to get more life out of them. The fruit that we were getting off of them was excellent. It's produced some of our most award-winning wines from our Riesling plots. We are coupled with a problem, phylloxera, an aphid that feeds on the roots of grapevines, injects a toxin, and eventually the plant dies. And the only way to end phylloxera's effect in your vineyard is to replant with grafted vines with a rootstock that is unsusceptible to phylloxera. And it was discovered in Colorado in November of 2016. It doesn't necessarily affect the quality of the grapes. It can affect the quantity, and the fact that you do have phylloxera affecting a plant does weaken it, as you would expect. So when a frost hits, you can absolutely destroy that plant faster. So we were counting on having, I'd say, 2 to 3 more harvests in our Riesling plots. And because of that frost, it definitely exacerbated the effect of the frost from having phylloxera.
When did you take the samples, the bud samples?
It was in mid-November that we decided to. We were actually kind of procrastinating doing that because we didn't want to be greeted with the reality.
What's the reality right now on May 31st, 2021?
the reality is dismal, really. Not only were we hoping to have a 15% crop, but what we were really hoping is that the trunks that were above the ground were alive. Even if we didn't get a crop this year, we were hoping that we could push some buds and that the trunks would be alive and that we'd get a new crop next year. But pretty much the reality is that everything above the ground is dead in the vineyard. We're still waiting to see which of those vines are going to push up fresh shoots from their old root bases, because they are older vines. They definitely have an established root system. But it's hard to tell which of the two problems, the frost or the phylloxera, is doing which part of the damage. So we'll just have to wait and see as the season goes on how many shoots we get from the ground. Next year, we'll have to wait and see which of those shoots push buds. We might know the extent of the frost damage by the end of this year. We won't know the current extent of the phylloxera spread until bud break next year.
We purchased a vineyard back in 2017 that needed repair. And so we've painstakingly restructured this vineyard, gotten the vines on this stronger path, and to have to cut away from the trellising wire, from the base of the plant, is truly heartbreaking. It's so much work. If you can actually just get so bogged down with negativity and defeat, because if you think about all the work that you've put in, and now you're having to absolutely start over from scratch, and what we're trying to do is have a better outlook, really try to see this as a blessing in disguise, as hard as that may be. This is our chance to choose grafted grapevines or cold hardy varieties that are better suited for our soil, for our climate, for drought, for extreme temperatures, so that we can do our best to prevent a situation like this. And this is our fourth vintage making wine, 2021, and we are a relatively new business. There is no way that we cannot make wine this fall. So we just got an email this weekend from one of our grape suppliers letting us know that they forecasted prematurely that they would have a larger crop. And they are seeing that they are unable to supply many of their clients, and they have to sell the grapes that they do have to these larger companies, larger producers that have these long-term contracts. And so we're just anticipating not getting any Colorado fruit. We're going to do the best we can to get some. We love Colorado wine. We love to support it. That's what we're all about. We are actually grateful. We have cultivated relationships within the broader wine world through our years in hospitality. And the other day, we put a post on Instagram, and it showed a photo of our dead trunks and that new shoot that we're trying to train up. And we got an email from a colleague that sources grapes from some of California and Washington's best vineyard sites. And he rallied and said, "How can I help you? I am well versed in transporting grapes in a refrigerated truck." And we about broke down just with joy that someone could actually just be moved by a... Sorry. It's obviously emotional. One sec. For someone to not even just have pity, but just to have compassion and take action to make sure that another winery here in Colorado stays afloat. And we're going to be able to source from some of California's and Washington's best vineyard sites. It might not be Colorado fruit, but we're going to make wine in Colorado this year. And we're actually very excited about the possibility and the quality of the wine we'll be making this year.
And so with the grapes that will hopefully come from Washington and California, what does the 2021 season look like for the Storm Cellar?
It's going to be different for us. Jamie and I both want to be here. There's plenty of work to do. Don't get me wrong. There's always plenty of work to do. But when the vines are pushing, they're screaming in your face. And it is really hard to wake up in the morning and do anything other than run out and deal with the vines in a normal scenario. And a lot of that pressure isn't here, which is interesting. It's a very different feel for us at this point in the year. But it's allowing us time to get a lot of other projects done, to host more intimate tastings, to be here, to be present for our guests. We have a bunch of new pets. We have 6 chickens. We have 2 new dogs. They all require a lot of work, and it's keeping us here. We're working on a garden. Our garden is beautiful. We're building raised beds right now, so there will be life here at this property. Things will be growing and thriving, and it's a pivot and tell the story kind of year.
And then tomorrow morning, Steve and I are going to be planting 400 new grafted vines, and then 300 more the next day, and then 900 in about a week and a half. Having that newness and that starting point is definitely a light at the end of the tunnel. And we are so excited with the rootstock that we chose with the Scion, you know, that top portion that gives you the grape and the resulting wine. And that's where the future is. So we're bettering our soil. We're learning techniques that help us conserve water, that give better water delivery, even possibly incorporating animals in the future to really have a cohesive farm that is sustainable for years to come. So yes, it looks like nothing's happening in the vineyard. It looks like you just see a lot of death, but there is a lot of life on the horizon, and that's what's keeping us going right now.
That was Jamie Henderson and Steve Steese from the Storm Cellar in Hotchkiss, Colorado. Next, we'll hear from Kaibab Savage and Patrick Matuszewski. Kaibab has been farming wine grapes in Palisade, Colorado for 21 years and has a biology degree with a minor in chemistry. Patrick Matuszewski is the winemaker with a background in brewing beer. The two co-founded Savage Spectrum in Palisade and opened during the pandemic 18 months ago. Their grapes are grown on 70 acres in Palisade, and they produce 30 varieties of wine grapes.
We're growing grapes from southern France, from all over
Spain.
Yeah. Kind of what I'm excited about and we're excited about is we're using these cold hardy varieties. These were bred to take the harsh climates of the US, the cold weather. You know, we get cold in the winter. It's Colorado. We have these amazing growing seasons. But if we hit below -5, classic vinifera will winter kill. They'll actually die down to the roots. And so we started experimenting in 2015 after our last cold event with these cold hardy varieties. And a lot of what we're real happy with is coming out of Minnesota. Private breeder named Tom Plocker is his name. We've had really good success with Petite Pearl and Verona. And Patrick's done a really nice job of putting a red blend together with them. We call it our Domain Sauvage blend, and it's a really nice
Approachable house red. You know, the cold hardy varietals, these Americans, they really kind of lack tannin. So instead of trying to force them to be something they're not, we just go ahead and take advantage of that, and we make this super approachable house red.
I want to talk to you about the cold event that happened on October 27th, 2020. How were your grapes affected, or were they affected?
It was pretty traumatic. I mean, and it really took some time to fully see the extent of the damage. You know, we went out and did our due diligence, and we lost 80%+ of our vines down to the ground. So we'll be cutting the tops off of them, the overwintering structure, and bringing them back up from the roots this year. That will be about 24,000 vines we're going to have to retrain.
You mentioned that you lost about 80%. Was that of all of the vines?
Of those, the cold hardy varieties did what they're supposed to do. They look great. So we'll bring in a crop off of those this year. And what's really fortunate for us is a lot of our wines that we're doing, we're using these. It'll be a smaller production, but we'll still have, you know, a nice production. But I also want to mention that we don't do exclusively cold hardy varieties. Like our name says, Sauvage Spectrum, we have the full spectrum.
Yeah, we do plenty of sparkling wines. We probably have more, you know, available than any other winery, kind of specializing in that, but also really unique white blends. You know, we have some Rhone varietals that do super well out here, as well as some big, bold reds and approachable reds, easy drinking reds too, but kind of cover the spectrum for sure. As a young company, we're trying to figure out what we do exactly. So we're willing to try a lot of things, throw it at the wall and see if it sticks. And it's been working pretty well.
Seems like a good philosophy for farming, just kind of experimenting, seeing what works.
That is why we grow so many different varieties. You know, a lot of places are known for a certain variety. I don't think Colorado's quite found their exact voice yet. And maybe their voice is doing all these obscure varieties better than everyone. I mean, we really do produce some amazing wines from these obscure varieties a lot of people have never heard of, and it's such an experience when people come into the tasting room and you get to tell them about Teroldego from northern Italy, grown at the base of the Dolomites. They're like, what? You know, and there's so many stories to share about these varieties and where they come from.
In a year where you would get closer to 100% fruit, mm-hmm. grapes, would you typically be selling grapes from your 70 acres to other winemakers?
We do. And that's what we've built our business on the last 21 years is growing grapes and working with our winery partners. We work with probably 25 Colorado wineries, a couple out-of-state wineries. One of the coolest ones is we actually send Colorado fruit to Napa. We have a connection out there, and she makes Riesling and Grüner Veltliner from Colorado fruit in Napa Valley. We have a very good network, a strong network of winery partners, and it really helped us grow. They've really supported us taking the step from grower to making wine. They've tried to help us along. Those partnerships that we both forged over the years in the industry have really just been invaluable.
And I think pioneering kind of the sparkling technique that we took in allowing an affordable Colorado produced sparkling wine, our winery partners were more apt to pick us up. You know, that we were able to offer this Colorado produced product. So then they can in turn sell it in their tasting room and have a sparkling offering. And they've, like you said, they've been amazing to work with. So we're really excited to keep growing that as well.
What does the 2021 season look like for, are you going to have extra grapes for sale?
We're going to sell as much as we can. Over the last, 5 years, these other wineries have been working with the cold hardy varieties. And so I want to continue supplying those to the guys who've been supporting us. We're going to be really thin on most everything else. There's a little Riesling, and that's about all we're going to be able to have to sell. We have a little more fruit than that, but we're going to keep it for our programs just because we have these products that we've developed that we need to maintain now, but it's going to be very, very small production.
That was Kaibab Sauvage and Patrick Matuszewski from Sauvage Spectrum Winery in Palisade, Colorado. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. Visit kvnf.org for direct links to all of the wineries featured in this program and to check out other Colorado wine resources. For KVNF, I'm Corey Stanton. Thank you for listening.